This is the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, Subcommittee on Human Services, and our agenda today is an overview and public hearing on House Bill 5039, which is the Board of Nursing, and House Bill 5040, which is the Board of Nursing's fee ratification. And members, this is not a work session. This is to receive information only. We will be dealing with work session later in the process. So just wanted to put that out there just in case members did not know. And so with that, Ms. James, we can begin.
Okay. Good afternoon. We are doing a public hearing on House Bill 5039, which is a budget bill for the Board of Nursing, and House Bill 5040, which is a fee ratification bill. The Board of Nursing, I guess the information before you is the LFO summary, which was also delivered to your desk, the LFO analysis of the governor's budget, the performance measures updates, which was not included in the balanced budget packet because we didn't have it ready yet. And today was added the DAS presentation and the agency's presentation binder. The Board of Nursing's mission is to protect the public health, safety, and well-being through regulation of nursing practice and nursing education. They license and regulate nurses, nursing assistants, advanced practice nurses, and licensed practical nurses. They have authority both to issue licenses and also to revoke and suspend privileges to practice the nursing in the state of Oregon. They certify nursing assistants as required by federal law that is required if you wish to have Medicaid or Medicare reimbursement. And they receive federal funds for doing so through the Department of Human Services. They anticipate receiving $1.8 million in federal funds, which they spend as other funds. Their total budget is about $6.8 million. They increased their fees in 1901, and the demand for nursing professionals has continued to stress their agency resources and are requesting fee increases across most licenses in 0305, and you will see that as a budget package in their budget. During the interim, they appeared before the emergency board several times to increase their expenditure limitation. Those were twice they appeared to increase limitations so that they could pay attorney general fees related to two cases that were going through the Court of Appeals. They also expanded their customer call center to meet demand and calls and improve renewal processing. And they had to pay for increased testing of CNAs to meet the demand for that licensing group. They had already received the funds. They just needed our approval to pay for it. The drivers of their budget is the ongoing shortage of nursing professionals and the expansion into minority groups, information and analysis of the supply of nurses that they take a point on in the state, electronic and internet processing of licenses and license data and issuance, and an ever-growing group of individuals licensing with them. They have done a great deal of work on their performance measures. I would like to draw your attention to four of those measures. One is the prompt investigation of cases. They strive to initiate and complete an investigation within 120 days. That has slipped from 91% to 84%. The improved training, they have improved their training programs for CNAs and are now experiencing a much better testing success rate from 45% in the year 2000 up to now 95% in 2001. They also do an ongoing triennial review of their processes to see if there are less efficient measures that they should be removing or adjusting. 2 years ago, they looked at 85% of their processes. That has slipped to 70%. And the number of graduates of registered nursing programs in the state who continue to practice, who remain in the state to practice, was 629 2 years ago, 700 last year, and they hope to bring it up to 900 by the end of the 2003-05 biennium.
Who's here representing? You're probably wondering what the pig is doing sitting there in front of you. And I might explain that your Health and Human Services committee have decided, along with one of the other committees, that all the use of acronyms, sometimes all of us don't understand, and for those who testify in front of us, as well as those on this panel, and the use of acronyms can contribute to the little pig that's sitting in front of you, and the proceeds for that at the end of the session will go to the Oregon Food Bank to assist in feeding the hungry. So it's a way of getting individuals to talk more in terms of language that we all understand, and to try to get us to minimize as much as possible the acronyms. However, I'm sure that the food bank would like for you to use a lot of acronyms so that you can make a lot of contributions to the bank. And with that, welcome. And we do. I would ask that you state your name for the record so that our staff will know who's speaking at each time.
Good afternoon, Senator Winters, members of the committee. My name is Patricia Miles. I am the business manager for the Oregon State Board of Nursing. Next to me is Jennifer Wagner. She is a licensed practical nurse from Eugene, and she is also our board's secretary for this year. Next to her is Adam Torgerson, who is our Department of Administrative Services analyst. We keep looking at the door. Joan Bouchard is our executive director, and I think she's been delayed by traffic. So I apologize up front that I'm going to stutter a little bit because this wasn't my section.
Well, proceed. I'm
but
sure you
I will try very hard to use all the right words. We are alphabet soup up there, and my intent is every time I come across a term that is a little bit alphabet soup to actually introduce you to that in case you hear it in the hallways, you'll know what it really is about. We received word just in the last few working days that you wished us to address some very specific questions. We reviewed the presentation that we had drafted, and what I would like to do, and I certainly will follow your direction on this, is to try to answer those four questions in the context of this. I'd like to try to point out as we are going through the overview which questions I think that this answers. I think there's several of these that are multiple. We'll try to get through the overview very quickly, and then after Adam has spoken to the governor's budget, we are prepared to bring as much detail as you wish to our discussion of our performance measures. We do have 19 of them, and I don't know if you want to hear everything, but we're willing to talk about those. And also more detailed descriptions of our programs and those policy packages we're asking for this session. Probably the very first thing we'd like to say is why we're here. I actually looked in statute and didn't find that in statute it gives our mission statement, but we, like most of the boards that regulate health practitioners, we exist to advocate for consumers. We do it in a rather roundabout way sometimes. We get tied up in regulating a professional, but it is ultimately for the cause of the consumers of Oregon nursing services. We have several goals the board sets. We want to aggressively investigate complaints. We want to conduct hearings and enforce appropriate disciplinary decisions in a timely manner. We want to ensure that we're fair to people. We want to create partnerships within our community, both within government, within industry, and within education. We want to establish good, sound educational criteria. We want to communicate effectively with all of our stakeholders, and we will talk to our stakeholders later in this presentation. We certainly have principles that are driven by our mission statement. Again, we want to take prompt and fair action. We believe that nurses, advanced practice nurses, and nursing assistants are integral members of the healthcare delivery system. And one of the bottom line pieces, I think, is of all of our budgets is that our fees must be fair, but equitable among all groups. Performance measures are probably about 70% of how well we do. We've developed performance measures in the past. You've seen them each budget session. This last year, we participated in our statewide process of revisiting performance measures with the Oregon Progress Board. And on a very personal note, having worked with this for so many years, it was a really good process. We thought that the tools that they gave us were very useful. We selected four broad goals and built our performance measures around those. First one is excellent customer service. Let's catch up here. Are you in the main presentation? I'm in the main presentation. I'm sorry. We'll get ourselves in sync yet. As he's catching up, we have four broad goals. Our very first goal is excellent customer service. Second, we want to ensure the safety of Oregonians cared for by nurses. We want to regulate in a manner that sustains the maximum number of nurses and nursing assistants in the public workplace without jeopardizing public safety. And last but not least, we want to measure the effectiveness of the joint efforts to address the nursing shortage, which we'll be talking about in more detail later. In the detailed section, we'll go through all of our performance measures. Next. We also, besides internal and statewide performance measures, we are working with the National Council of State Boards of Nursing. This is an organization that all of the states and all the territories have boards of nursing. They all belong to this. And they just started a project the last few years called the Commitment to Public Protection Through Excellence in Nursing Regulation. Basically, this is an attempt for all state boards of nursing to come up with performance measures where we can compare ourselves across the board to similar states and to dissimilar states. We are covering, among other things, we're covering elements of licensing, discipline, governance, and they were very careful to survey the stakeholders. They surveyed employers of nurses and educators. They talked to nurses who had made complaints about other nurses, as well as nurses who had had complaints about them, to see if states were being perceived as fair and expeditious in their processes. We just recently got the results of those studies, so we don't have an analysis for you. The data was for 1999 and 2000 fiscal years, but we are starting to analyze it and see where we can draw comparisons and improve to keep Oregon at the top of the list. Our agency is an other-funded agency, and this is kind of how we use our budget, I think, is the question we're answering here. We have a 9-member board, 7 nurses and 2 public members. The 7 nurses must be composed of 2 licensed practical nurses, and of the remaining registered nurses, 1 must be a nurse practitioner, 1 a nursing educator, 1 a nursing administrator, and 2 must be non-supervisory and engaged in direct patient care. We hold 5 regular meetings a year. And during that time, we generally have had a 2-day board meeting for the last, I think, about 4 or 5 years now. We have 1 day specifically devoted to disciplinary proceedings. And then the second day of that meeting is spent on administrative rule hearings, taking testimony, and setting policy. In addition, the board meets by telephone conference call for a lot of their the work that they do in between board meetings. They also participate in a lot of committee meetings to flesh out policy issues. The agency itself is organized on functional lines, and we have 3 main categories: administration, licensing and certification, and practice and investigations. We will have more detail later in our details section. We license certified nursing assistants, which you've heard the term CNA before, certified medication aides, CMAs, and this is a very important alphabet soup problem because that's also the abbreviation for medical assistants, and we do not license medical assistants. We license licensed practical nurses, or LPNs, registered nurses, known as RNs, nurse practitioners, casually called NPs, certified registered nurse anesthetists, who are registered nurses who practice in the field of anesthesia, usually in rural areas. And finally, our newest group are the clinical nurse specialists. These are master's prepared nurses who can address specific clinical needs. Practice Investigations provides advice on the practice of nursing to licensees and investigates all complaints made against licensees and those who may be practicing nursing without a license. Because of the size of the agency, however, we have one budgetary limitation, and we do administrate that centrally to provide maximum flexibility. Excuse me. We do have many stakeholders. Our primary stakeholder, of course, is the citizens of Oregon. We have over 60,000 licensees that we think are pretty important. The employers of nurses have a strong interest in us. Nursing education programs, nursing and other health-related organizations such as the Oregon Nurses Association work with us quite often. And also the associations for long-term care. There are a couple of those, I believe. We also work closely with other state and federal agencies. These are the latest statistics. As of December 2002, we've had explosive growth in the last few years. We actually, if you want to know more about the specialties, binder, we have a statistical report for you with details of all of our licensees. In the very beginning of that, we have definitions of what each of these professions is. It can be very confusing, even among the professionals themselves. What do we do with ourselves? We strategically plan, and this is how we direct our resources. We're currently focusing on initiatives in major healthcare delivery trends. The nursing shortage is always number one on our list. Nursing assistant shortage is related but actually has some different root causes. They're being looked at together in many cases, though. We're very concerned about continued competency of licensees and finding good ways to measure that. There is extensive utilization of unlicensed personnel in the healthcare industry, and we struggle to determine where those lines are drawn. And also, there are a lot of advanced practice issues that are developing at this time. We're always, and this is kind of related, looking at the impact of technology on nursing, because things like telemedicine have impacted the way nurses work in their workplace, and it can really impact the regulatory environment. Public safety issues are really important to us. That's where we've gotten into.
Senator Carter, please.
Okay, yes, ma'am.
Please tell me a little bit about telemedicine. How does it impact regulation?
Jennifer? Okay. This is Jennifer Wagner. She's a board member, and I think she probably has a more broad knowledge of the nursing.
Senator Carter and members of the committee, I would say telemedicine most commonly comes to mind in the sense that a number of, for instance, insurance companies, as part of their benefits, are offering, like a 1-800 number in which you could call in and receive nursing advice. From a regulatory standpoint, you're then receiving medical care in Oregon from someone outside of the state very often, in which we aren't we're not overseeing them. We haven't checked their licenses. We don't know where they were educated. That type of thing. So that's the most common thing that I think comes to mind. I think more and more we need to look at issues in regard to continuing education and that type of thing that are offered via the internet or those type of sources without much regulation over what type of programs those are and those type of things.
So are there opportunities for extended education right now through satellite programming?
Oregon currently, except for nurse practitioners, does not require continuing education for nurses in the state of Oregon. Nurse practitioners have to have it for their certification and prescribing privileges. But I think a number of nurses, just to stay on top of their field, or you know, it's evolving so rapidly, are doing that. And it's an issue that we as a board are looking at, whether or not we want to change that requirement. So it's just an area that we're...
Yeah, I just see where that could be complicated for that to happen. And then if it goes too far afield, then the legislature is going to be on you guys because somebody has given the wrong... Oh, okay. Thanks.
Thank you. How widespread, or is it pretty isolated, the telemedicine program?
I think it's becoming more and more widespread.
Can you give me some of the areas in which you're talking about? Is it diabetes? What is really the context of the message?
I would say the primary issue that I think about, Senator Winters, is that just a general sense of triaging any type of medical condition in which. You would call a number, and your complaint could range from shortness of breath to abdominal pain, any type of condition. And you're under the presumption that the person on the other end of the line is a nurse, but Oregon, the State Board of Nursing in Oregon, has no regulatory ability to look over that type of information.
Has the board received complaints from individuals who have called the 800 number and thought that they were getting advice from someone and found that it was in fact from out of state?
Not that I'm aware of.
Then, I mean, you're calling it to our attention because you're thinking that that problem may be out there.
Correct.
But it has not occurred.
Not that we're aware of. I think a number of times the follow-up in regard to those situations in which if poor care was given, you know, the patient eventually would go to a local health care facility and receive care. And I'm not sure the patients always know how to track that, you know, unfortunate situation if it did occur.
Do you have any of the 800 numbers?
No, but I could certainly get those for you.
Could you get them for me?
We have several public safety issues that we see as emerging issues for the board. Increasing incidence of criminal history backgrounds in the general population. We think it's really important to have reasonable standards for language proficiencies for foreign applicants, but it's difficult to determine what that proficiency would be. And we're also dealing with the increased complexity of disciplinary cases. We are very focused on developing partnerships with consumers. We also have developed partnerships with the other members of the nursing community, but we're always trying to reach out to consumers and strengthen their education about the processes. In your presentation notebook, you'll notice there's tucked inside the patient guide, the consumer's guide to... I'm not sure what we called it. It's basically how to make a complaint and who to contact. This is beyond just our agency. We're also very involved in trying to apply evidence-based processes to our regulatory decision-making. Our business planning, on the other hand, tends to be a little bit more short-term and more focused on our agency and this budget. We have current business initiatives primarily in technology investment to improve both agency efficiency and customer service. With 60,000 people, it's very difficult to treat them personally, and technology can help us expedite their needs. We want to make sure that those customers, whether they're licensees of the public, are receiving prompt, courteous, professional service. We want to maintain communication with our stakeholders at all levels in multiple venues, because nurses and nursing assistants in particular work very odd hours, and they drive how we communicate to them. We're also, through the performance measure process, trying to continuously improve our processes based on performance data, and I'm hoping to be able to tell you about some of those things during our performance measure discussion. Another answer to the question of how do we use our budget is the changes we've implemented in the past decade.
Mm-hmm.
These are all structural changes to the agency based on emerging public issues. The nurse monitoring program was established as a response to the increased amount of substance abuse we were seeing in the community and as a way to have a non-disciplinary avenue for these people, and we will have more details on that later. The certified medication aid, as we know it, where we are actually making sure that people who are passing out medications know what they're doing, that just happened in 1994 as we were developing the nursing assistant program, which basically was in 1990-91.
Representative Smith.
Certified medical aid, you said, or medication aid?
Representative Smith, that would be certified medication aid.
Does that assist a pharmacist?
No, ma'am. Representative Smith, Chair Winters, a certified medication aid is a certified nursing assistant who has some experience as a nursing assistant and then takes additional training so that in, for example, long-term care, they can function and pass out medications to patients.
Mm.
So they actually work under a nurse, as do nursing assistants by definition.
Mm.
They must be under the supervision of a registered nurse to practice.
Follow-up? Are you okay?
I'm okay, thank you.
I see Joan has arrived. Did you get caught in traffic?
I'll just finish this section and then we can change seats here. The law enforcement data system, also known as LEDS, is a function of state police, I believe, now. We started doing 100% checks of our all of our applications in late 1995, actually. And that was as a result of the high incidence of people who had been arrested or convicted and were not reporting that to us. We added an advanced practice consultant as a response to the needs of the advanced practice community for help in their many issues. We added a public information officer as a response to the need to communicate with stakeholders. And these things happened just about the time we added two new licensed populations, the certified registered nurse anesthetists were added in 1998, and clinical nurse specialists, I knew I was going to say something wrong, were added just about a year ago.
Could you just provide this body with a list of all of the various, whether it's the REN, the CNA, all of which you are responsible for licensing, and just a brief description of...
Where's your dollar?
What did I say?
CNA,
I said like this. I'll put my dollar in.
Okay.
CNA. So. Registered nurses. Yes, she's caught me. this panel pays too.
We all
pay. And so that this Celeste group will know the breadth of what you license and their responsibilities.
Madam Chair, actually, I could direct your attention now just very briefly.
Okay.
Under the last tab, there's a thick booklet called the Statistical Report. And on page one, it's a few pages in, we have those licensed occupations so that you can see what their duties are. And it's a kind of a brownish
book. It's listed, though. I see it. It's your... It's the Oregon State Board of Nursing Statistical Report.
Yes, and we have definitions.
For the fiscal year to 99 to 2000?
Ma'am.
And you've made no additions or changes since then?
So Senator Winters at the session. I hope to be able to have the latest printed version of the statistical report that handles the years of 2001 and 2002. We have it in draft form so I can answer specific statistical questions, but we don't have it ready to be published yet.
Now, my question is whether or not you have added any other professional categories since you published this document.
No, ma'am.
Madam Chair.
Senator Carter.
So that the committee won't get mad with me, would you please tell them that you gave me the job of being parliamentarian for this money? So, so that they will know they won't get mad with me, and so the audience won't get mad with me. I just happened to catch the chair.
See, he gets my dollar.
That's pretty good.
I have a little piggy bank on my desk, too, but I haven't figured out how to get people to put money in. It says chocolate fund on it. The final change I'd like to bring to your attention is that last May, after coming to the April e-board, we opened our customer service center, and this was in direct response to the nursing shortage and the demands that it put on the agency. So we hopefully will always be responding to needs in the community when we add programs.
Madam Chairman.
Senator Morris.
Could you elaborate a little bit on this customer service center and what it does and how it actually has influenced filling the need for nurses?
Madam Chair, Senator Morris. We can give you a lot of detail. We even brought our customer service center manager. But just in brief, we opened this because prior to the center, we had a group that was licensing and certification. And if you called into our agency and you were, for example, a nursing assistant that wanted to take the exam to become certified, there was one individual that you could talk to. If she was on vacation, if she was at break, if she was on another phone call, you couldn't reach her. At the same time as she's answering all of the phone calls, she's also trying to run all the applications through the process and schedule them for testing. We found this really created a workload a conflict. They didn't know which thing they were supposed to do. The customer service center itself is intended to provide one-stop shopping for those who call into our agency. The licensee calls in, and we have, and we'll refer to this later, an automated call distributor, a technology piece that makes sure that the next available operator takes your call. We've trained the people in the center to answer broad questions across the entire agency. And when they call in and they ask for something from us, they have all the common forms, they set up records, they check on the status of your application so that the technician only answers those calls that might be very pertinent to that person's need. And most of the time, they can focus on processing applications. Does that answer most of the question? This next section really answers both questions, how we've been performing, as well as how do we use our budget. We are very focused on cost containment. We're very lucky to be a large agency. We have over 62,000 licenses. So we've been able to take advantage of the economies of scale to implement a lot of our cost-saving efforts. A lot of these do partner with technology, so these two items kind of come together for us. Some examples of this, in 1995, we established an interactive voice response line. What that is when you can pick up a phone anywhere in the world and call this number, and 24/7, is that an abbreviation? 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you can reach a system where you can put in a license number of a person and check and make sure they have a valid Oregon license of whatever type. We used to have an operator just handling those calls. And the problem is these are very routine in nature, and a nurse may be wanting to call us at 11 o'clock at night. So we've changed our resource allocation to deal with that. Many employers, such as hospitals, actually need a written form of this. So we recently were able to complete an internet version of this so they can go online. If you were to go to our website, you can go to a verification section and put in information about a nurse and find out that they do, in fact, have a valid license to practice. We also have used technology and tried to save money in document storing and retrieval. With so many applications that we're processing, we implemented scanning of our documents. We did that with last biennium's budget, and we're not all the way through doing all of our scanning. We have boxes and boxes of these. But just the ability to retrieve the image documents so far has been spent just numbers of hours that we've saved. Another good example, our current licensing database, we implemented about 3 years ago, and that was with money from the 97-99 biennium. This has saved us a lot of money as well, even though we had to spend a lot of money up front, because we can avoid having to bring a programmer in to make minor changes, such as adding new licensee types or, for example, new data that we might want to gather from our licensees. I, myself, can sit down at a computer and add a field, and we can start processing things immediately. So this saves a lot of time and money. This biennium that we're in now, we have an e-commerce initiative. We're not just talking about e-commerce, though. We're doing a broad redesign of our forms to reduce the number of forms, make things more clear, consolidate what we're asking for. This is all kind of an umbrella project that we've done a lot of the research phase, and we're in the design mode right now. We're hoping to implement full e-commerce by June 1st. We're working with the Department of Administrative Services Information Resource Management Division. They have an e-commerce section, and we're working with former Representative Hill in that process. There are some other ways we control costs. We are changing the way we do business when we can. We worked with the Department of Justice.
Question, how many forms do you currently have?
Madam Chair, I believe that the latest count is over 30 for the various types of licensees and the various ways that they can do things.
Yeah. Just a follow-up question.
Senator Carter.
How long does it take a person to fill out forms from the time they request until they're certified?
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, are you asking the timeline for the processing of the form?
Yes.
The timeline for processing forms does vary because of the various ways someone might become licensed. If someone has not been licensed by us before, or anyone, they might have to take an examination. And we have standards for the vendors we work with on testing that they must schedule someone within, like, 2 working days. I would say the average time frame can vary between less than a month to much longer if the person has difficulties. Endorsement is a process that nurses come from another state, and they present their credentials, which we review. We make sure that they haven't done anything bad, or they've been practicing before. That's a somewhat shorter time frame. The average number, I believe, is less than 1 month. We would like to be processing them within about a week in the future. Those are the main ways that people become licensed with us.
Yeah, follow up.
So if it's a graduate from an Oregon school, then that's a shorter period of time because you have their credentials and everything right here.
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, in fact, that's a little bit of a success story for us. You'll see when we talk through performance measures, our average time and how long it takes to get someone through. For Oregon graduates, we encourage them to actually apply in the spring before they graduate, about April. And when they do that, we can set them all up entirely. We get what we call a presumptive list from their colleges saying, we believe that this person is going to graduate in June. And based on that, we've actually made rule changes that allow, the rules used to say that we couldn't schedule someone to test until they graduated. What we've changed is that we can get them scheduled and they can take the test the day after they graduate. About 3 days after they graduate, we license them. Three days after they take the test, because it's all electronic, we can issue the license if they passed.
That's fantastic.
technology has really helped us.
Yeah, that is success.
Representative Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I ask questions of this group with great great fear and trepidation because many hours of 10 at night and 6 in the morning, you guys can make my life a living hell from calls from the hospital, you know, and it's, you know, I know I've gotten the wrong side of a few nurses and they've disciplined me properly. So I will ask my questions carefully and don't tell anybody in Medford I ask you any questions. Is that agreement? Some of the nurses in serving in Medford right now are from Canada, and Canadian nurses are extremely well trained, as are some nurses from Great Britain and South Africa. And they expressed to me that with this huge need of nursing in this country, and as well trained as they are, and I can attest to that, that they had a difficult time getting licensed in Oregon, more difficulty than they did in other states. And I wonder if you're aware of that and you could comment for me.
To answer this, we'd like to bring Joan Bouchard up. She is our executive director and has been for over 10 years. So she has broad knowledge of the issues that nurses from other countries face, an issue that we're trying to deal with.
Good afternoon, members of the committee and Chair Winters. I am Joan Bouchard, and I will try to answer that question. Right now, our administrative rules state that people who are graduated outside of the United States must either they must be certified by the Commission on Graduates of Foreign Nursing Schools prior to taking the national licensure exam. So that has been our requirement, and the advice that we had received from legal counsel is that if we require that for one country, we can't discriminate between countries. We should require that for all countries. So we are re-looking at that issue to see if they're at least the graduates of schools in English-speaking countries can be allowed to come in and take the NCLEX examination without going through the Commission on Graduates of Foreign Nursing Schools.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I have a question. Is that rule consistent with the rule that governs physicians and others in the medical field?
Chair Winters, I'm sorry, but I do not know what the requirements are for physicians.
Dr. Bates, do you have
I'm working this through my mind, and my memory of it is there are various pathways for physicians to enter this country and practice here, some through residency programs that bring them in automatically, but I believe they have to all take the National Flex exam to be licensed, and we are looking presently at the BME to also see if the exam that the BME is requiring is appropriate too, since it covers general medical fields and not specialty fields. So it's different, but also probably more cumbersome than it needs to be also. That's what it's been looked at.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. Could you put your dollar up there, BMEs?
No, man, you got me.
You always will.
Well, she's a
and we'll
how many times did I use the BME? How many times?
Three.
I'm going to start putting mine in the beginning of the.
Kate, if you're watching, you've got my money. Bring it down.
Yeah. Are you working with? You said that your legal counsel said that you had to make sure that it was consistent. And I know that this is an administrative rule and not the statute. Doc may be and in consultation with what they're beginning to do, what your profession is doing in looking at this whole entire issue of how can we, one, make sure that we're protecting the public, but also given the problems that we currently have in Oregon and across this country with the shortage of the nurses and nurses' assistants, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I would encourage that we begin really give some serious thought to that. And along that line, I have another question, and I maybe to ask if it is correct that because of the nurses' shortage that we're actually paying individuals to come into Oregon at a much higher rate than we would have if we actually had our nurses trained to be able to get the job done. Am I correct in what I've heard, that we're paying some exorbitant amounts because we do not have adequate nursing staff?
Chair Winters, members of the committee, it's true that Oregon has a significant nursing shortage and that there are nursing agencies that do bring nurses into the state. And yes, those nurses are employed at a very significant rate, because not only does the hospital, for example, have to pay the nurse and the nurse's salary, but they also have to pay a fee to these temporary
In some cases that we also have to provide housing mm-hmm. and other perks and amenities in order to get nurses into. Okay. Is that correct?
Yes, Senator Winters, that is correct. And I think that's why it is, one of the reasons why it is so important that we solve the nursing shortage in Oregon. Yeah. And there are lots of people trying to work on that issue.
Senator Morris, did you have a question?
I was going to affirm. Thank you, Madam Chair. Our organization in the Mid-Willamette Valley of Corvallis, Albany, Lebanon, and the coast, Lincoln City and Newport, we're spending about $7 million extra a year in traveler agency nursing expense. So it is a huge issue in healthcare.
It's, and I'm sorry to get off track, but this issue is so big, and that what, and I'm going to deviate, because what are you doing with the community colleges and others to talk about methods that we can begin to accelerate, if you will, and work on some of these issues? I know that OIT is involved in some of it. I know that our college here at Chemeketa is working since we had the last session. But on a broad basis, what is what are you doing to assist in this process?
Chair Winters and members of the committee, the Board of Nursing is involved on several fronts. One of the issues that the Board of Nursing feels that we can impact is trying to get nurses who are wanting to get licensed in Oregon to get them licensed and on the job as quickly as possible. So we are trying to do that. We are also trying to gather good nursing manpower statistics, because everybody's looking to the Board of Nursing to supply the supply side statistics so that they can figure out how many nurses are there in Oregon, how many are in the pipeline. So we're trying to really provide reliable and accurate information to these people as they're looking at this. The Board of Nursing is also a member of the Oregon Nursing Leadership Council, and that organization is made up of all the major nursing organizations in the state, and it includes educators and directors of nurses of hospitals. It includes baccalaureate and associate degree nurses. It includes the Oregon Nurses Association, and it includes the Board of Nursing. And through the efforts of the Oregon Nursing Leadership Council, we have established the Oregon Center for Nursing. And the Oregon Center for Nursing, the main focus is to try to help solve the nursing shortage. And they're looking in several ways. They're looking at recruitment of people into the profession, and very involved with recruitment efforts. They're also looking at retention of the nurses that are in the profession now. What is it that we can do in the work environments that make nurses want to stay into nursing? Or come back more hours into nursing? So they're looking at the workplace environment. There's also a goal of the Oregon Center for Nursing to double the enrollment in nursing education programs by the year 2004, and they're working very closely with the community colleges and with the baccalaureate programs to try and make that happen. I don't know if you have heard about a new model for nursing education in the state, but there's a coalition or a consortium of nursing education programs, both community colleges and the universities, who have gotten together to form a consortium. And one of the things they're looking at is how can they share faculty between the baccalaureate and the associate degree programs because there is a major shortage of faculty. They're also looking at, are there shared clinical resources that they can use? And because clinical resources are limited in many of the programs, they're looking at trying to get outside funding from private grants and the federal government to develop clinical simulation centers in the state, like in the Southern Oregon, I think in Central Oregon, and in the Portland area, so that like airline pilots can go in and do clinical simulations of flying an airplane, that these clinical simulations can provide the kinds of clinical experiences that nurses need, and also quickly, more quickly. So there's a lot of cooperation that is happening, I think, between the community colleges and the universities to try to increase the capacity for nursing education programs, because right now there are a lot of applicants that want to go into nursing. Finally, the nursing salaries are up. There's jobs out there for nurses, so people are wanting to go into nursing now. But the trouble is we don't have the nursing faculty, and we don't have the capacity in the nursing education programs to handle them.
Are you also looking at those responsibilities with inside each one of the occupations that and I'm thinking in the days, and it may be antiquated, when I was at the med school, and I used to always hear from the registered nurses the things that they thought that they could do if the docs would give it to them. And then I've heard from the licensed practical nurses that, you know, there are things that we could do if the registered nurses would give it to us. And so are you looking at those kinds of issues as well, that when we talk career paths, if there are things that perhaps could be done and could be done at a level to where we can get those through the career path a lot faster?
Chair Winters, members of the committee, yes, the board is also looking at that. I think, as you know, these professional scopes of practice evolve. It used to be that nurses couldn't even take blood pressures, and now the scope of practice continually evolves. And what we have to do, I think, as the board of nursing, is we have to make sure there's nothing in our administrative rules that prevents somebody from being able to expand their scope of practice. We need to work closely with other health-related boards on this issue, and we need to look to make sure that there is career ladders within educational programs, and that someone doesn't have to start all over in an educational program, for example, an LPN to an RN, that they don't have to start all over. We've been working with the Long-Term Care Association in the last year because they're very interested in doing a second level of CNAs, certified nursing assistants. and so we have been working with the Long-Term Care Association, and we are in the midst of writing rules. We have a model for how we're going to do this, and they're hoping that this career ladder will encourage nursing assistants to stay in the field because they'll have someplace more to go than just being a CNA. So we are looking at that, and I think the main thing we have to do is not put up barriers to allow that to happen.
Good. Representative Bates.
Representative Smith was first.
Yeah. I'm particularly concerned about working conditions of our nurses. You know, we can do all this stuff to train, recruit, pay for education, give scholarships, incentives, but if the employers can't keep them, you know, what's the use? You know, the long hours, 12-hour shifts, little breaks, and Dr. Bates just said, extreme amount of pressure. I have so many of my friends who are nurses and who've talked to me, and my graduating high school class had tons of nurses. It's an area that I'm extremely concerned in. It's become a cost issue anymore. There's a shortage of nurses. Well, I think that's probably a big one, large factor right there. Hospitals don't want to pay. Mm-hmm. And not my good friend, Dr. Bates, but, you know, that's, he has nothing to do with hospitals. Is there something there that we could do along those lines to work with employer groups in making it a more desirable profession?
Chair Winters, Representative Smith, that is also a major focus of the Oregon Center for Nursing is to, as I said, to try to improve the workplace for nurses. I think the salaries for nurses have gone up in the last couple of years, so that's a good sign. But there are other things about the work environment that nurses want. They want more autonomy. They want more voice in how patients' care is delivered. They want more autonomy. They want to be respected and valued for their work. So that one of the things that the Oregon Center for Nursing is doing is they're looking at trying to, quote, magnetize the state of Oregon. And this is the American Nurses Credentialing Center accredits hospitals throughout the United States that has meet certain criteria for work environments for nurses that encourage nurses to work there, and they have certain high standards. And if they get accredited from that, they're called a magnet hospital because the symbolism of a magnet hospital is that they care for the nurses, they value the nurses, and the nurses are a major part of that hospital, so they become magnet hospitals. It's very expensive to get a magnet status and to go through that accreditation process, but what the Oregon Center for Nursing is saying is let's take that criteria and voluntarily see how many healthcare facilities in the state of Oregon can meet those criteria without having to go through the whole accreditation process, but could it meet those criteria or put in some of those criteria in the workplace so that nurses will want to go there and work or to stay there and work. And so the concept is to try to magnetize Oregon healthcare facilities as being good places for nurses to work, and in doing that we hope to draw nurses into the Oregon healthcare facilities to work. So that is a whole initiative of the Oregon Center for Nursing, is to try to magnetize healthcare facilities in Oregon to be places where nurses want to work by meeting these criteria.
Thank you for that.
Representative Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A great deal of what I was going to ask has already been answered, so I won't burden you. Nursing in the hospital setting by its nature is difficult. It's weekends, it's nights, it's time away from your families, and then there's horrendous things you put up with from patients that we're not going to talk about here. Having said all that, the climate in some hospitals are significantly different than others as far as nurses are concerned, and I think that's something that we should be honest about. There's a pressure on the hospitals to make their bottom line financially. Yet some hospitals, three that I'm intimately involved, four now that I'm intimately involved with, two of them have never had a nursing problem, two others chronically have nursing problems, one's just gone through a strike, and one is being threatened by a strike. And the differences in pay and benefits in the hospital is about the same. The difference is how you respect and treat your nurses from a personal point of view, and that's something that you may want to look into. Mm-hmm. Having said all that, there is a question coming. I also believe in supply and demand. And supply is limited right now. And demand is high. And one of our big problems with nursing is not that, oh, no, we're not putting enough nurses into it, but then there's too many dropping out the other end very early in their careers when they would normally work till 60 or 65. Mm-hmm. And the question is, with the increased wages and benefits nurses are now receiving, and as a general rule, are more staying in, or is that loss on the other end still continuing, and are you tracking that?
Representative Winters, Representative Bates, we are tracking that, and we're tracking. One of the problems is that the nursing profession is getting old. The average age of a nurse now is 47 years old, and it's very difficult work. As you said, you know, the evening and nights, and very physically, it's very difficult work. So. They are retiring, and it's going to get worse because as these 47-year-old nurses start to get to retirement age and the work gets more difficult, they're going to be leaving the workforce. At the same time that the aging of society is going to happen and people are going to be becoming on Medicaid and Medicare, so you're going to have people leaving the profession at the same time the needs of the healthcare society is going to go up. So there's a crisis now, but people are expecting a much worse crisis, for example, in 10 years. But one of the things that we're looking at for the older nurse, or the nurses who are dropping out, is maybe what they need to do, the hospitals need to be more flexible in terms of part-time work and part-time hours. I think the other thing is that these older nurses have an incredible amount of experience. And they can be used maybe not to do the physical work, but to mentor these new nurses in the hospital so that this knowledge and these skills of these older nurses can still be utilized with the new nurses.
And Chair?
That's right.
I appreciate that information, and I don't mean to dwell on this, but the question was, are you seeing a slowing of people leaving the nursing profession prematurely, or is it something you really can't track?
Chair Winters, Representative Bates, yes, I think our statistical report, I'm trying to think, what in our statistical report will show us that, and
there is. Senator Winters, Representative Bates, I've actually put together the statistical report for the board over several years, and we are trying to track it, and part of our problem is resources to do statistical analysis. At the same time as we see this aging of the group, so people in their 50s and 60s are saying, oh, I don't want to do this anymore, I want to cut back. We're seeing a large group of people who are cutting back. But at the same time, we see, and this kind of mystifies us from time to time, is the number of people who are continuing to practice into their 70s and 80s. I have the draft statistical reports. As of June 30th last year, we had 28 registered nurses that were over the age of 80. These people are practicing actively, or they wouldn't be qualified to renew. We have over 400. We have 426 that are in their 70s. We have kind of a mixed bag, and this is a little bit anecdotal because I'm also dealing with the retired nurse status nurses. We have this bubble in the 40s and 50s, but we have people at either end, and we're kind of watching because we keep thinking it's going to move and go off the end, and it's not quite there yet. So we are actively watching it. We're tracking it, and we're actually doing some studies of how to bring the people that are still in their, say, 50s, where they might be interested in another 10 years of working, back into the profession. What can we do to ensure safe practice if they haven't practiced in, say, the last 20 years? They've been off raising their families. Now, hey, my husband's having trouble at work. Economy's bad. Maybe I could go back into nursing. We're doing a lot of work in that area. So the bubble is still kind of around the 46 to 48 age group, but they're not just dropping off the edge, they're sliding down the hill.
You know, I'm going to have to move this along. So I want to also provide some opportunity today. We have some public testimony that wants to be entered into the record, so we need to move along a little bit. This is excellent dialogue, by the way, and I know that we're all very interested in the issue of nursing shortage and what we're going to do in Oregon to try to solve the problem. So thank you for all that good information.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm going to go really fast through the rest of our overview. We have information on how we're using technology and other methods to cost contain, as it were, and to implement things. I did want to mention that we are working with other agencies like DOJ, Department of Justice. Oh, that one slipped by almost. In looking at our administrative process and our hearings processes, and we've actually been able to change rules to the fact that we didn't have to have an assistant attorney general present at all of our civil penalty hearings. So it's not just technology, but we're very proud of technology. The last element I think is really important that we wanted to cover during this overview, and that is what we're doing in response to Senate Bill 786. What are our efforts? And we've kind of touched on about the nursing shortage, but we wanted to specifically speak to that bill and what it asked us to do. So if we could move forward just a few slides. One more. Okay. First of all, we were supposed to collect data on the ethnicity of our licensees, and we've been collecting that data for well over 10 years. We have data on over 90 voluntary data on over 96% of our active licensees, or licenses, I should say, because some people hold multiple and we don't ask them to resubmit. We are, and I can attest to this because I get the phone calls, we are the source for this data, And they're using it in the community colleges, they're using it at the Center for Nursing, and they're using it in graduate students are studying this. So we're collecting that. And we just have a really brief slide. There is material in the supplemental tab on the ethnicity of our licensees as it compares to Oregon as well as among itself. Probably the largest area where we are disparate, I should say, with the population of Oregon is in the Hispanic community, because that has grown so very quickly. We, other than that, we are very close. You can see it's like 0.1% difference. The biggest group, like I said, we're underrepresented with Hispanics. Other than that, we're pretty close.
What's the ethnic breakdown of your staff?
Our staff? We have 35 permanent positions at the board. Ethnically speaking, three are from ethnic minority groups, and two are disabled.
What is the ethnic breakdown of the three?
We have
American Indian, Asian,
and Pacific Islander.
Any men?
We have three men in permanent positions. They're hopelessly outnumbered, and we make them do all the bad.
Another reason of well-functioning board. Madam Chair, may I ask a question? I understand your situation with licensees. I'm afraid to ask the question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. I'd like to see a breakout by which licensees. I want to see how many RNs are versus CNAs. RNs are registered nurses, and CNAs are sort of advanced. And I'll just give you the $2. Thank you.
Chair Winter.
I'm in for $5 a day, aren't I?
Yeah. Yes. In the supplemental information tab of your binder, I have a breakdown, and it is by every license type. And I'm afraid there are abbreviations there.
No.
Because it wouldn't fit otherwise. It's a few pages in there.
I was looking for it, didn't see. What whereabouts was it?
It's in the presentation binder. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
It's minor. It's a bit confusing.
Third page back.
But we tried to give specific information to support this.
It's in your statistical report.
Yeah. It's actually under the supplemental. I have the very latest and greatest.
The binders.
I think the suggestion is that members, if you will take your booking and go through it thoroughly and review it and read up on the data that's in the book.
I would be happy to point that out later if you desire. Mm.
Chair Winters, if there's additional information that the members of the committee would like, we would be glad to provide it. I think we can provide that information because we have it in our database. So anything that you would.
Continue. Okay. The other and most important part, of course, of Senate Bill 786 was to reach out into the community and to find ways to increase participation in our licensee group. And in some of these things, we are working directly with other groups. Other ways, we are partnering with the Oregon Center for Nursing.
Does the Oregon Center for Nursing, you've talked about it a lot, which means that it's an important part in what you're doing, is that, are the members of that body that you're working with, what's the ethnic compilation of that group?
Chair Winters, the Oregon Center for Nursing is actually a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and it's housed at the University of Portland. The executive director of that center is actually a board member for the Oregon State Board of Nursing. And members of the board of the Oregon Center for Nursing is made up of a representative from each of the nursing organizations and the Oregon Nursing Leadership Council. And So there, I mean, right now there is no, on that board, there is no ethnic minority on that board, but they're working very closely with the community.
I guess where I'm trying to go is that one of the, if I look at the population, and we're saying that we have a growing population in the Hispanic community, and we wanted to begin to reach out to individuals to bring them into nursing fields and et cetera, you know, where is the vehicle, if you will, to begin doing that kind of work? One of the, you know, are you talking about, are you meeting with the Commission on Hispanic Affairs? Where are you going in order to get those messages out?
Senator Winters, I think the next...
Same with Black.
Right here. One of the things we're doing is we're working with the Mexican Consulate in cooperation with Portland Community College and the Mexican Consulate and the Board of Nursing. And what we're looking at are trying to work with nurses who have been educated in Mexico who are here. And we're trying to... make sure that we're helping them to become overcome any language or cultural or legal barriers that they have to become licensure here in the state. So we're working with the Mexican Council on that. The Oregon Center for Nursing is also working with the Hispanic Nurses Association. One of the things that we're also doing is working very closely with high school counselors. And what we've done is we've said, what can we do to increase the minorities in the nursing profession? And one of the things that they're telling us is that you need to get minority nurses to come in and talk to the kids in the high school. But they need to know that there are nurses that are the people that are blacks and Hispanics, and they need to see that there are minority nurses there so that they can use them as a role model and also as a mentor. So they're encouraging us to find those nurses and bring them in the high schools, and the Oregon Center for Nursing is facilitating that.
Well, it might be helpful if they have some representation on some of the organizations that are helping with the planning. You know, I think it's what, you know, because I think Great Senior, I think of Salute, I think of other organizations in the state mm-hmm. who have direct contact with the population that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. You have the Commission on Black Affairs, you have the Commission on, mm-hmm. on Hispanic Affairs, you've got these linkages, mm-hmm. and I guess that's why I pose this question to you of what methodology are you using. I would encourage you to start to begin thinking about how you can, whether it's the center or whether it's your organization, to be having some of those individuals inside while you plan. It's where you plan to begin to implement that you get all this information to begin carrying it out. And, you know, simply to say that you got to go out and find somebody to go to the schools. If I was in Portland, I could immediately tell you about individuals who were in that community, and I'm sure the two members up in this panel can with the black community. I think it should be elevated a little higher than that so that you're talking about a long-term plan mm-hmm. with which to solve some of these problems. Particularly when I see an 8%, and we know that population is going to go up, mm-hmm. That we need to really address some of those. Just a side editorial yeah. comment.
Senator Winters, I agree with you. I mean, I think nursing can do much better getting minorities and diversity in the nursing profession. Those numbers show you that we need to do a much better job of that. I didn't mean to insinuate that they weren't working, though, with the Hispanic Nurses Association or that, like, the Oregon Nurses Association is not talking to their Hispanic nurses when they're saying, how can we solve this nursing shortage? But we can do a lot better. Okay. Thank you.
Senator Carter.
I remember, Joan, that when the dental community was trying to get more African-Americans involved in dentistry, they would have summer institutes. Have you guys thought about something of that nature? Because that would be one of the ways you could target your high schoolers who are interested in nursing through some kind of institute mm-hmm. each summer, if it's no more than a week or 2 weeks, whether you're shadowing or mm-hmm. or being in the nursing school. They get the whole ambiance of their future.
And I do think that that is something that the Senator Carter, I do think that is something that the Oregon Center for Nursing is looking at. And I know they're working with the Saturday Academy to do some kind of that immersion, and that they did that last summer, actually.
Yeah.
And they're setting up experiences so that these people can shadow nurses in the clinical experience to so they understand what nursing is. And they did that last summer. And I think that they're thinking of doing that again and even expanding it. So that's a good idea, and I will take that information back.
I was just going to kind of complete this section with one of the basic tenets that the Oregon Center for Nursing has said about bringing both minorities and everyone into this field is that we have to change the image of nursing. And I'm not a nurse. My mom was a nurse, but I work with a lot of nurses. That sounds kind of strange, doesn't it? But basically, I think we all have a little picture in our head of what a nurse is, and society in general doesn't think much of nursing. People who know nurses do, but, you know, we have TV shows that mock nurses, especially if they're men. So people have this image that this is, you know, bottom rung, serving everyone. And they're trying to elevate it and make it kind of across the board. So they're trying to kind of change that image, and they're doing that with people from grade schools, they're doing it with the high school counselors, and they're also doing it with a media campaign. And this is just the first piece of the media campaign, but this actually got publicity as far away as Canada. It sounds strange to talk about men, but when we make it mainstream, everyone will want to be a nurse if it's not gender based, and it's not just white women age 35 to 45. Then we're going to encourage people to do this. So with that, we would like to turn it over to Adam Torgerson.
Senator Carter. Senator Gordon.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your presentation. Could you say a little bit more about that particular ad campaign? Where is it based? How much are you paying for it? Is it an Oregon company? That's the first phase. What's in your second? What's coming behind that particular approach?
Chair Winters, Senator Gordley, this campaign is coming from the Oregon Center for Nursing up here in Portland. It's being funded by the Northwest Health Foundation grant money that has come into the Oregon Center for Nursing. And this is their first one. Apparently the next one that they're going to do is for minorities, for a recruitment poster specifically for minorities. Apparently they already have it scheduled for March 1st, and Deborah Burton said that the next poster will be out by the middle of March, and that the next one's going to be minorities. UPI or the national newspapers picked this up, and that's how it happened to get national and international attention, and they're hoping that the additional marketing campaigns will do the same.
Thank you.
Senator Carter.
Yeah, Jones, I missed an acronym.
Oh, you said that word.
What?
You said UPI. Oh, yes.
We did bring extra quarters.
See, I have my enforcer right beside me.
If you have very many nurses up here, you'll have lots of money in your thing, in your piggy bank, because we're terrible. We're awful.
I'm not quite certain. You know, I sit in, I'm a member of the general government, and you'd be surprised how much that group is. I think last session they collected $1,000 that went to I believe it's cancer. Yeah, it's cancer. Yes. So, Senator Gordon.
Yeah, if I could just add kind of an aside or a sidebar, I'm having a kind of an interesting experience this afternoon as I'm listening to your presentation. I will tell you that in 1965, when I was a student at Girls Polytechnic High School, I wanted to be a nurse. But at that time, the premier nursing program in our city did not accept black folks. And that was a part of my experience and disappointment at that particular time. So as we're sitting here talking about your efforts under Senate Bill 786 and your other efforts around affirmative action, recruitment, et cetera, while we have made some progress, this is still Oregon, and Oregon has a particular history around inclusion or exclusion, mm-hmm. and our efforts need to be aggressive. Whatever we're doing now, we need to triple time it. Mm. And you can look to folks on this panel to assist you in your efforts. But just know that we still have a long way to go, and we need to triple time our efforts. As you were doing the planning, as Senator Winters was saying earlier, always look at who is in the room with you helping you to plan. If you don't have people at the table who look like us or other people of color, you're going to miss some things. And again, we have a lot of work to do, so know that you can count on our support.
Chair Winters and members of the committee, thank you for that. I totally agree with you that there is a lot of work to be done, and we do need to do that. And I will take this back to Deborah Burton at the Oregon Center for Nursing, because they have some money and they're working on it, and hopefully we can maybe together all of us work out and figure out what can we do to increase the diversity in the nursing profession. Because it is needed. And I think more and more nurses are taking care of more diverse populations, and they need to understand that. And they need to understand the beliefs and the cultural beliefs of the people. And I think as they continue to take care of diverse people, that they need that cultural competency. We need to stress that also in our nursing education program. So we're committed to doing that.
Senator Card.
Joan, I just want to say, let me tell you something. Black, white, blue, yellow, or indifferent. When I'm sick, I want help. Mm-hmm. But since your numbers are down, it would just make sense to me to go out there like you're doing all these men and go into communities of colors. I mean, listen to you guys today. My granddaughter wants to be a nurse, and so I'm going to personally pay for her to start nursing school this year.
Cool.
She's working in my office now, and I want her to. She wants to go into nursing, and I want to help her to do that. But Joan, help us. We need more people to help take care of us. And the one thing about it, indigenous people tend to take care of indigenous people in an extended kind of way. Mm-hmm. So our communities are doubly suffering because we don't have it. So now we're talking 28 years for her, and then Jackie go back a little longer, and we still say we have a lot of work to do. Let's have some plans with it. Yeah. Oh, baby.
I think that's a hit to the people.
That's a $10 hit, you guys.
Oh, this is an indigenous person who goes back to
Chair Winters and Senator Carter. You know, I will commit to you that I will get the Nursing Leadership Council together, and hopefully we could meet with the three of you, and we can figure out what can we do here.
Yeah.
So I will commit to that, to making that happen.
Because what she's saying, I started the med school in 1959. That's why she's saying I go back a little further. So my history is a little longer. But in any event, I think not only we're talking about the nurses, but as we look at our state and we look at the population within our state, I think that all of these groups bring a lot to the table, and I think that, you know, you have a responsibility on your board to assure that there is the inclusion. And I think we're saying to you, and I'm particularly sensitive to when we're talking about, you know, I'll take the Hispanic population. I think to have someone who speaks both languages when you're dealing in a field talking about nursing or any of our other fields where we must communicate with individuals. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that it is very wise for us to bring them in to assist us. I think that one of the things happened, the reason we have on the administrative side that we're having to bring people in to be interpreters for us, because we don't have people on our staff who can then do the communication for us. So I think it's to our advantage, not only to for those of us that are in the system, but also to assist those people that we're serving. And after all, all of us are servants. You know, the nursing profession and the medical profession is by its very nature a servant profession, and I think it just assists us all. And I just encourage you to listen to this council today, and to find, and we'll be willing to help you to talk about people that you can talk to, and as you talk to the Senate.
Thank you.
it's to our advantage as a state and as a people. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm not going to belabor that subject anymore.
I totally agree, and we will.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee.
You didn't expect all this today, did you?
I learned a lot. For the record, my name is Adam Torgerson. I'm with Budget Management Division, and I'll be going over this presentation, which is the Budget Management Overview. It's a higher-level overview. We'll be able to get in detail with the agency to the whatever level you desire, but the overview itself starts up pretty high-level. So the second page of it is the historical context for the board's budget. You can see that the budget in the governor's budget this biennium increases pretty significantly. Some of those increases are one-time nature, and we'll talk about the policy packages later. Some of those increases are permanent nature. Page 3 is just a pie graph showing that the board is entirely underfunded. Page 4 shows that the governor's budget just overall includes greater staffing for the customer call center, an additional investigator and support staff, a nurse consultant position, a database administrator position, that's a limited duration position, and office reconfiguration and teleconference capability. I'll go into a little bit more of those and so will the agency. The board is one program unit, although it has multiple functions inside that particular program. Its budget is one program unit, and it has a personal services and services and supply split of about 68% to 32%, with 68% being personal services. The board appeared twice, as the legislative fiscal staff said, in April and in January for attorney general expenses, construction of customer call center, as well as increased certified nurse assistant testing expenses. And they had the compensation plan adjustment in the third special session. The essential packages for the board, they've got a lot of phase-out programs from some of those e-board reconfiguration of the call center kind of things. And most of the inflationary package is from the remeasurement of the fourth floor of the office building, where the board has space. DAS remeasured and found that they were charging some boards higher than they should have, some boards less, and so we adjusted for that. I think the Board of Pharmacy went down 1,000 square feet. Board of Nursing went up, I believe, 1,500 square feet or something to that effect. And so we made the adjustment in the inflation. They have several policy packages, which the board will go into some detail. I'll go into a little bit here. Policy package 101 is related to the customer call center. That'll upwardly reclassify one position, implement a full and a half-time call center staff positions, have a call center manager, and basically replace the front desk support that will now be helping with the call center. And that's four positions at 3.75 full-time equivalent. Package 102 is for investigations and investigational enhancement. There's a half-time secretary, a nurse consultant position to work on policy issues, an investigator position that assists with nurse monitoring programs as well as other investigations, I believe, law enforcement data systems. And then the third package, information technology, almost the entire package is one time in nature and would be phased out in 2005-07. There's a database administrator that's limited duration and technology replacements and improvements. The only permanent increase in that package would be the copier lease. You're going to get a copier lease, $10,000 or so a year, or a biennium, I apologize. Package 104 reconfigures the office space and provides audio-visual equipment in the conference room. It was a priority when we worked through the budget to the governor's perspective, because it will allow education and communication. Folks that can't necessarily get to Portland to see the board meetings can perhaps be able to watch them over the Internet, or it'll allow some other things potentially. They're also going to share this space with the other boards on the floor as it's available.
Who did the original measurements of the floor, and are they still around?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I don't know the specific person. It's DAS Facilities Division. I could find out more details about that.
Someone from DAS who did the original measurement and later discovered that those measurements were incorrect.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I assume that's correct. Unless Pat knows more about that than
Senator Winters, just my history of the situation is that on the fourth floor of our office building, there had been a lot of space changes over time, and I think they only remeasured each piece. There was a lot of wall space and that sort of thing that got left out, so they were doing everything very piecemeal over the last decade, and that's how this happened.
Senator Carter.
My question then becomes, where is the efficiency in gas to make, because I suppose they had been on the other end where their budget is being extended by 1,500 feet that they did not anticipate when the efficiency was not on our side. How do we get greater efficiencies? And you can take that back to Mr. Weeks until we ask that question, that we hope that that is being corrected. Because in a way, it's unfair to these folks who did not anticipate in their budget. Because I've been looking at their budget and scrutinizing, why are these people asking for so much money? The 1,500 feet space and how much per square foot?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I believe $1.34, is it? Something. It comes out to almost $50,000 in the biennium.
That's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot. And then the legislature is going to be on their backs. I just want to highlight that, Madam Chair.
It is so noted.
Thank you, and I'll bring that back. Madam Chair, members of the committee, the package 105, which is fingerprinting, it was related to a concept to institute fingerprinting. The agency is no longer promulgating the concept, so that limitation can be trimmed. The fee adjustment.
Come on, excuse me.
Send a card.
Why not?
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, the board has had extensive discussions throughout 2002 about the issue of fingerprinting. The concept was originally proposed that when we saw multi-state offender, which is a tag in the law enforcement data system record, mm-hmm. or we had reason to believe the person had been in other states but may have had offenses in other states that were serious, that we could use the fingerprinting process to have access to the National Criminal Information Center database, which we currently do not have access to. The board could not find consensus among itself to an extent that it was confident it wanted to come to you. So at that point, we decided if we can't agree, then, and it wasn't a serious disagreement, but it still was, should we do everyone? Where do we draw the line? And it's a very tough question. So that's when they decided, let's not go there this session. There are bigger issues out there.
Contrary to DOCS, nursing, the Board of Nursing has done an excellent job of their people in keeping out and keeping down having low incidence of people who would cheat and say they're who they really are not. And I don't know. I think I'd be concerned about the blemish on my record in case we're not as thorough as we were in the past. That's what I'm pondering.
Chair Winters and Secretary Senator Carter, I would just like to say that we did, several legislative sessions ago, we actually came and proposed fingerprinting, and we were in front of the Judicial Committee, and at that time they said, if you're going to do fingerprinting, you need to do everybody, you know, and we're just not sure that to do 62,000 licensees, that's going to be that efficient or cost-effective and the percentage that we would find. So there's still a lot of questions, and that's why we're not bringing it back to you this time. But we do, I just want you to know that we do a LEDS check on every single application, the Law Enforcement Database System Criminal Records check on every single application that does come through our office. And that has, I think, the word that the Board of Nursing does that has really gotten out there so that people who might have a criminal records check think twice before they apply to the board or go to school or go to a training program, because the number of positive LEDS checks has gone down considerably.
Thank you.
Continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Page 11 outlines the fee increase, which is part of the last package that we just spoke of. and the detail is there. This revenue is necessary to support the first 101, 102, and 103 policy packages. The only technical adjustment that would be remaining, Legislative Fiscal Office and Budget Management Division are working on salary issues, and we're working on a way to do that efficiently. And we, Legislative Fiscal should bring that forward at a later time.
And I understand that the adjustments, there's two additional adjustments with respect to salary freeze, and those will be coming along in a later package.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, is this a time to ask questions about the breakdown of their expenses?
When we get ready to go into, I want you to continue to peruse our budget. When we start getting into our work session, you will be doing budget breakdowns. Unless you just have a burning question that you need to ask.
I do have
right
a burning question.
Go ahead and ask the question.
To spend $320,000 a year on board expense of approximately $36,000 per board member strikes me as being a little on the high side, unless there are some things about government that I have yet to learn.
Madam Chair,
it's not in this data. It's in the on page 7 of the previous document that we were referring to. And we can address that at a later date if you want to come back with that, so we can move on. But it strikes me as being a bit unusual. But.
Chair Winders, Senator Morris, I'm sorry. Can you tell us what page again you were referring to?
Page 7 of this document.
Oh. So it is.
It's described as board activities, 4% of your budget, if I'm looking at 4% of 8 plus million. Am I calculating correctly?
The Chair Winters, Senator Morris, I'm not sure what the exact math is either. I do the chart and I forget the numbers, which is kind of strange in a budget person, I realize. They do the board activities do constitute 4%, but that is not like those are not personally paid to the board members. That does constitute board travel, which is about maybe $20,000 through a biennium. We do pay our board members $150 a day for the days that they do board business, which is budgeted, although they may not use it all, it's budgeted for about 15 calendar days per year. Also included in board activities would be when we bring together a board committee and from the community to come together and work on board policy issues. And also the board communications. We put a few in your presentation binder, the newsletter, and outreach that the board does. Those are functions of the board. And they also, that's true, quite a bit of our attorney general costs are charged to the board itself. This is when we are having a board meeting. We do have our assistant attorney general that's assigned to us there to advise in administrative law. So approximately 35 to 40% of our attorney general fees in a normal biennium where we have no unusual legal cases is spent for the board.
Yes, thank you.
Would you, and I think it's probably going to be broken out when we get into detail, and we will discuss further the need and necessity for the AG to be there at meetings and those kinds of issues a little later. But that's a good question to ask, but we will be going detail line by line through their budget. Thank you very much. And if there's no further questions, I would like to open it for, it's a public hearing, and I do have a couple of some individuals who have signed up. With that point,
we are, unless you want to go into performance measures.
We've got 15 minutes. And so I did want to give our guests an opportunity, and we can deal with the performance measures. They are in the book mm-hmm. later, and we can take them up.
I would suggest to the committee that they may want to move the performance measure piece in the presentation packet into your regular budget book, because it was not in the budget book at the time it was put together.
So if you put your performance measures into your regular budget book so that you will have them. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And at this time, Gary Correll. And I believe that you have submitted written testimony as well, and you should have it, members, before you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Gary Harrell. I'm a nurse as well as being an attorney. In fact, I'm past president of the Board of Nursing back in 1991. Our law practice involves a lot of regulatory work where we represent licensees before a number of different boards. One of those boards is the Board of Nursing, and we really do have a fair amount of contact with the Board of Nursing, as well as the physical therapists, the Board of Medical Examiners. How am I doing on acronyms so far?
You're doing very well.
Several different boards. We do oppose SB 5039. We take no position on SB 5040. And I'd just mainly like to give a little different perspective to this committee than what you may have gotten from the Board of Nursing. Among the licensed nurses, there really has been very little change in the number of nurses that are in the state. Less than 1% change between 1995 and 2000. And yet the budget of the Board of Nursing has gone up quite a bit. It seems that our taxpayers and our voters believe that there's fat still in the state budget. They rejected ballot measure 28, and I think part of the message there was trying to say you haven't cut enough out yet to make us happy. And I believe that there is fat to be cut out here. There's been talk about cases going before the Court of Appeals. One of those cases involves our firm. It was a case of a nurse who said some bad words, man, she probably shouldn't have said, in a nurse's station. We're not overheard by patients, but the Board of Nursing wanted to revoke her license to practice. We went to contest a case hearing. The hearing officer said something to the effect of, yeah, you know, you really shouldn't have said those words, but no patients heard it, so kind of no harm, no foul, and did not recommend revocation. When we went to the board, listened to what the hearing officer had to say, accepted most of what the hearing officer had to say, and then revoked her license, alleging she was one day late requesting a hearing related to a mental health exam. Now, keep in mind, we had already been through contested case hearing, and the board did not raise that issue. So when you're hearing about these horrendous cases, keep in mind that there may be another side. It is particularly after the two cases that have come out of the Court of Appeals recently, the Curley case and the Dearborn case, it's just not acceptable to revoke a nurse's license on a technicality. And that is what we're in the Court of Appeals over. That's the subject matter. In 1991, when I was on the board, we had two investigators, and keep in mind, about the same number of nurses. It's my understanding that with the departure of Mary Amdahl Thompson, who is a senior executive with the Board of Nursing, the Board of Nursing is considering replacing her position with two positions. Now, maybe that's a testament to Mary Amdahl Thompson, what a great job she was doing. But still, in a time of budget crunches, adding executive positions doesn't look that good. So that's mainly my intention, is just to bring another perspective. If you want to know other disciplinary horror stories, I can go on very much longer probably than you want to hear. But while I'm up here, I'd also like to shift gears, if I may. And I've heard sitting in the gallery here a lot of discussion over your concern about the nursing shortage. And in fact, Ms. Bouchard said that the major shortage of faculty is the key issue in our nursing shortage, and I agree with her completely. It is a lack of faculty. There's a sacred cow that you should be aware of that's directly tied to the shortage of faculty. And that's in this state, in order to be a nursing professor, even if the person is a PhD,